This is Tall Boy Radio. Each week, your hosts, Beans, Gaz and Andy, grab a beer and discuss our topic of the week. We try to keep things uncomplicated. The premise for this podcast is as simple as we are. Not only can you listen to us wherever good podcasts are found, you can also watch us. Just search Tall Boy Radio on YouTube. If you have a story and want to feature on the show, drop us an email at tbrpodcast@hotmail.com or leave us a comment on social media at Tallboy Radio on Twitter and Facebook and at Tallboy Radio Podcast on Instagram, or leave us a message via the Anchor app, which we can play on the show. This is a Beans Does Stuff production. Anyway, the show is about to start, so go grab yourself a cold one, sit back and enjoy.
Welcome back to episode 68 of Tallboy Radio. And if you recognise the voice, it's me, it's Gaz. I'm in the driver's seat tonight. I don't quite know how long it's been since I've been in the driver's seat, but it feels a while, so looking forward to this one. Just before we get into the topic of the week, I'm going to introduce two regular co-hosts. So if you want to give us a shout-out, tell us what you're drinking, and if you've got any shout-outs that you want to give, you can do it at the same time. Ad, do you want to go first?
Yeah. Cheers, dude. Thanks for the introduction. I am drinking the final beer that I picked up in Eam, and it is a full-bodied IPA, and it's called All Fall Down, or All Fall Down if you pronounce the word full properly. Now, I saved this one to last because I thought this was probably going to be the best of the bunch, and I've got to be honest, this one is. It's a bit of a gem, actually. It's not quite as hoppy as I like them, like the American-style IPAs, but it's a really flavoursome beer. Now, I haven't got a shout-out, but I have got a question for Gaz. So, we've talked about all sorts of different beers and wines and spirits on this podcast at one point or another, but one thing we've never mentioned is Baileys. Gaz, you quite like a Baileys, don't you, dude?
I do quite like a Baileys, or three or four, yes. I've been known to drink sort of half pints of it on certain particular nights out, but yeah.
Well, they've got a new flavour coming out. Have you seen what it is?
I haven't, no. Go on. It better not be pineapple or banana.
Well, Baileys Colada, a pineapple and coconut Baileys, dude. Just for you, because of your love of pineapple. I knew you'd be thrilled.
Yeah, I'm absolutely ecstatic. And if you can't tell the sarcasm in my voice, that's me being sarcastic. Why ruin Baileys? Because Baileys is just beautiful. So why ruin it? Don't understand it.
The addition of pineapple, much like it is when it's added to anything else, might just improve it.
Or might not. Well, I didn't know that, but I certainly will not be rushing out to purchase a bottle of that. I think maybe, like, was there a chocolate Baileys, I think, at some point? I don't know whether or not they did like a chocolate infused one, which was okay. It's not the original one, but that was okay. So just about sort of live with that. Anyway, moving swiftly on from pineapple-based products. Andy, do you want to give us a sort of a hello and any shout-outs you've got or whatever?
Hi, I'm drinking the old British tea. May or may not have medicinal whiskey in it. It doesn't. I'm still recovering, so I thought I'd just be a bit more weedy and have a nice tea today.
Yeah, for those of you that don't know, Andy's been a bit sort of under the weather, as they say. But any shout-outs, any mentions you want to give, Andy?
Not really, no. I've only just been in the back in the land of the living this last few days, so.
No worries. To be honest, I'm drinking a good old-fashioned, and I you know that I love this guy's at LFA. Absolutely love this stuff. I think it's possibly surpassing Hoegaarden as my favourite drink, and obviously TBR podcast class, as always. I haven't really got too many shout-outs either, which is sort of strange. A bit of a sort of conversation with a couple of the normal sort of Ron, Daz, sort of Chris. But no shout-outs, as they say. So I'm going to move, just crack on, I think, because I think we've got a bit to cover this week. We're going to talk about a couple of events and events that have happened in each of our lifetimes that sort of resonate with us, that we remember where we are in it. And I suppose it goes down to that, where were you when sort of title. So I'm going to start, I'll go chronologically with the oldest one that of the two that we're going to talk about. August 31st, 1997. It was about 12:30, maybe, local time, possibly a bit earlier. And it was the death of Princess Diana. And I remember exactly where I was and what I was doing when, we heard the news, because I was actually with my now wife, who was my girlfriend at the time. And we've been out for an hour. And we came out of what was then Valentino's, which I think is now Genting Casino, after in Hanley, Ayup Duck.
You've probably spent more time in it now it's Genting than it was when it was Valentino's.
You know what, you're probably right. In fact, you definitely are right. So we came out after a night out there, and we got in the taxi. We ordered a taxi, got in a taxi home, and it was taxi driver said, "Oh, have you heard the news?" And we were like, in a half sort of drunken stupor, "No, why, what?" And he went, "Oh, Princess Diana's died." And we thought he's on a wind up. We were like, "You want a wind up?" Like, and he's like, no, she's died. We were like, "No, whatever." And then we got home and we flipped the news on, and then literally proceeded to stay up for, you know, 2-3 hours after getting in. And it was the night that Princess Diana died. So remember exactly what we were doing, and it's one of those events that, like, the more you watched it, the more you were like, or I felt, so the more you were like engrossed with it. I was like, really? Like, sort of couldn't, bit of shock, bit of like, has that really happened? Like, how has that happened? What were the events leading up to it? Why has that happened? So that's the first one. I don't know whether or not, obviously, what you guys, if you sort of remember what you're doing. Ad, do you want to, I mean, where were you? What were you doing? I mean, obviously, we're similar age and stuff, so.
Yeah, to be honest, it's an interesting one, actually, because anybody who knows me knows I'm not a huge fan of the royal family. However, this is one that probably shocked me because it was so out of the blue. Now, strangely enough, I was up early that morning. Didn't find out about it the night before like you did. I found out about it early in the morning, just getting up, sticking Sky News on just while I was having my breakfast. And I was sitting there watching this news article, and it was like they were talking about, they were outside Buckingham Palace, and they were talking about somebody called Diana who'd passed away. And my instant thought was, well, I'm not really big up on the royal family. It probably isn't the Diana I'm thinking of. It must be some old duffer that I've not heard of.
Yeah.
And it wasn't, you know, and then it suddenly sort of dawned on me, and it's like, wow, actually, that is fairly big news. I was up, I'd got up early, because funnily enough, I was playing golf, which is a rarity for me. It's probably why I remember it.
Wow, okay.
And actually, if you'd asked me, I said, I would have thought I was playing golf with you. Obviously, that clearly wasn't the case, but I dug out my diary from 1997, and I was playing golf with Peaky, Jeff, and my brother John, Malkin's Balk. Yeah.
Yeah, wow.
And I remember going out, and I went out to pick up, I think probably alcohol to smuggle onto the golf course. And I also had a quick glance at the newspapers as well while I was out. And actually, the original editions of the newspaper said that she was injured in a car crash, because the news hadn't come through that she had sort of tragically perished. Yeah. And then they had a later edition which sort of told the story about what had gone on. So yeah, I do remember it. I do remember it really well. And I can also remember the fact my mum was on holiday in Wales and phoning her to tell her, and she thought I was, again, like you. Adam, it's not funny. What are you joking about? This voice. Like, why would I phone you and tell you if it wasn't true?
Why would I randomly out of the blue phone you just make up a random story about a royal family member? Yeah,
exactly.
Because they're the sort of things that you do.
That, yeah, well, actually, now I think about it, I can see why perhaps you thought it was a But no, it was, like I say, from someone who is not a fan of the royal family, pretty shocking for me.
Yeah. And Andy, what were your sort of memories? I mean, obviously, you're a little bit younger than me and Ad, so do you remember specifically as such, or?
Yeah. My dad was living with his sister at the time, so we were staying at their house. And I remember us coming down in the morning, and they all had the news on and saying what had happened and all that. And didn't really understand. Oh, I was 13 at the time, so sort of had a grasp of what happened. But I just remember thinking, like, they're just watching it all day, the news. I was like, I remember getting a bit bored of it, to be honest.
Yes, think, come on, there must be going on.
Yeah, but it's not something you want to see, you know, when you're a teenager and all. It's just like, hey, I'm going to watch this all day. But I just do remember, like, thinking, wow, that's... Because, like, Harry's, like, a similar age to me, so it's sort of like, I don't think I could imagine losing my mum at that age, sort of thing.
Yeah.
But, yeah, that sort of blew me away a bit, but then I was just like, I'm going to go outside and play football now.
and it's weird because I'd say I'm not a massive Royal fan. I sort of get it, and I sort of get where people say they bring income into the UK and this, that, and the other. I sort of get that, but she was so well liked and I suppose loved by, you know, the UK, well, around the world, actually, not just the UK. She was a proper, like, just, you know, Princess of Hearts or whatever it was. And I remember thinking, like, how can people that don't know her be affected to the extent that they were? Because, you know, you got people in floods of tears. And, I mean, obviously, you know, I going back to what you were saying, Andy, you know, I lost my mum when I was 20, sort of 5, 26, something like that. So, and obviously, you know, that's heart-wrenching and all that. But then I remember thinking, how can these people that don't know her be so affected by it? And I sort of couldn't get my head around that for ages. But going back to that night, it was probably about an hour and a half, couple of hours after she'd actually been pronounced dead, because I think a couple of the people in the car were pronounced dead effectively at the scene, and then she was taken to hospital and she was pronounced dead a little bit later. But it was at that point then that I say the sort of theories and the conspiracy theories and all of this, and like, how did it happen, why did it happen, all sort of started to get jumbled up with, obviously, you got Henry Paul, was he the driver, and then you got a security guard in there. He actually survived, he did. But like, how did it happen? And then obviously Dodi Fayed was involved and all that. And all of a sudden there were these, like, it was a paparazzi and it wasn't an accident and it was staged and all these things, wild sort of theories started to sort of be thrown around afterwards. But that night, it was a bit shocking, really. It's probably the first time that I'd been live, and obviously I'm not old enough to remember sort of JFK or anything like that, but it's probably the first time that somebody really, really, that I really knew as a massively high-profile person had died, and it was literally all across the news. You literally couldn't go on any news channel without it being that, BBC One, BBC Two, ITV, and so on. Sky were covering it left, right, and centre. And I remember sitting with Jenny, my wife, and we were like, I can't believe it. She's more of a Royal fan than I am, really. And she was like, not gutted or devastated, but she just couldn't get her head around, actually, that it had happened. Do you know what I mean? How could this person be ripped from us? And obviously there was, you know, there was the funeral, there was Elton John singing the song and this, that, and the other. So it was, that was really the as I say, that was the first time that a really famous person, and yeah, I suppose it'd be a bit like, I don't, like, and it nearly happened, sort of Tiger Woods or whatever, for, you know, somebody I really admire, and so somebody like him down, I'd be like, oh my God, like, if I heard that had happened, I'd be like, oh my God, I'd remember where I was then, sort of thing. So, I mean, what we're not going to delve too much into the conspiracy and stuff, and I think they've sort of put it to bed, but do you remember thinking at the time, you know, was there something else? Because obviously there's all sorts of stories about cover-ups and stuff. Do you remember thinking anything like that? Or was it literally just like, actually, you know what, it's just, they just hit a stanchion under the bridge or whatever and she died? What were your initial thoughts?
I mean, for me, like you said, guys, we were a little bit younger then, weren't we? So you're talking, what, 24 years ago. So I was 16. And but you're more, yeah, I wasn't 16, listeners. You're more bought into the idea then. You're a little bit more naive and you believe things you're told. So when your mates are telling you something in the pub, how it was all like made up when it was done, and you know, and a royal family knocked her off because she was carrying on with Dodi Fayed or whatever it was, you bought into it and you believed it. And it's only when you sort of actually think about it, that actually, you know, you look at the number of tragedies that do occur on these roads for people who aren't famous, then there's, statistically speaking, it was only a matter of time. Yeah. And these sort of conspiracy theories, and I apologize if you're listening to this one, Ken, but these sort of conspiracy theories, they exist because news like this is really difficult to accept, that somebody as famous as that can be wiped out in something as simple as a traffic collision, whether the press were involved or not, and there was reckless driving. And, you know, let's face it, in a lot of traffic collisions, reckless driving is involved, and it isn't always the reckless driver who's punished by that. So these sort of conspiracy theories exist because it's difficult to accept that something like that can just happen, that somebody's life can be snuffed out just as simply as that, when, like you say, it's somebody that so many people look up to and love and admire.
Yeah, I mean, it's weird because, you know, they were saying that, you know, driving at excess speeds and this, that and the other, and he's driving at 60 miles an hour, and you thought, 60, okay. But then you think, actually, in context, 60 miles an hour around the streets of Paris in underpasses was probably excessive. But then you think, well, he's obviously been told to try and get, you know, effectively flee from the paparazzi and this, that and the other and stuff. So he's obviously an advanced driver and all of that sort of stuff. And, you know, was he able to sort of handle those conditions? You know, there's all sorts of rumours about, you know, was there a malfunction? I say malfunction of the car. Was there a tyre blowout? What was it that caused it? Was there flashes from the cameras that blinded him and he couldn't see? You know, there's all these, sort of, as you said, Ad, sort of almost wild conjecture in terms of sort of why. Because actually, maybe people just struggle to grasp that it was just an RTA. It literally is just, you know, some guy was probably driving a little bit too fast. I mean, obviously, then there was rumours about, well, he'd had a glass of wine, and well, had he had one glass of wine or three glasses of wine or whatever it was. And then you think, but there's no way that her bodyguard and you know, the protection would have let her get into a car with a chauffeur that they knew was intoxicated. Like, that just doesn't happen. So you sort of scrub that off almost immediately. And it was strange, just because I remember, like you, I'd been not fished in as such, but thinking, excuse my French, like, shit, really? Like, was it? Was there a cover up? Did really? Was there some sort of Dodie fired connection? Was there an MI5 connection? You know, was it the royal family that commissioned it? And all these things are just like ridiculous. But that was like the first sort of thing that I suppose resonated with me. Andy, you bit of it. I mean, obviously, you might have sort of heard about it, read about it subsequently. Were you it was just an RTA, or yeah, you were a bit of a sort of conspiracy theorist as such? Or
I remember hearing all them saying it's like the royal family and all that, but I think for me it was always just like the paparazzi just maybe being a bit too reckless and.
Yeah,
and that's causing the driver to, you know, drive a bit abnormally.
Yeah, a bit faster than he would have done that, or whatever.
Yeah, because they were pretty big on her, weren't they? Like at the time, wherever she went, there was like 30 of them swanning around and stuff, paparazzi.
Yeah.
So yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, it was, as I say, and I don't know, and I don't know whether either you guys do. I don't know what this sort of the final inquest was. I think it was it like accidental or whatever. I don't think there was anything. You know, it was just an accidental death. I think caused by effectively an RTA. So, but moving on, the second one, which I think most of our listeners, I'd be surprised if they didn't. Happened on the 11th of September 2001, which was obviously more commonly known as 9/11. Obviously, the Americans, they do the months and the days the other way around and stuff. So, yeah, 9/11 was weird for me, like really weird. I remember exactly what I was doing. I remember exactly who I was with. I remember exactly what people said. And that's the second sort of thing that we're going to talk about, second event, really. Do you want to go first on 9/11? Obviously, I went first on Diana. Do you want to talk about 9/11 and what your sort of thoughts were or where you were? Yeah. Or
Well, strangely enough, actually, this was one that I didn't find. Everybody was watching the news and listening to it and sort of talking about it, apart from me, because I was off work. I had badly broken my arm playing football with a questionable tackle from Mr. Peter Jones, not the one from Dragon's Den, sent me into the wall, and I put my hand up and my wrist had bent there and not there.
I think I remember that, actually.
It was a bit of a nasty break. So I was off work, and I was bored out of my mind, and I was enjoying far too many cans of Stella as painkiller. And I had decided that day to build a website for the films that we'd made in our youth for Sabotage. So I was spending my time constructively. However, that morning, my phone contract was up, and I'd been out that morning, and I bought myself a Nokia 8210. So I was, you know, up to date. And back then, if you remember when you had a phone, you weren't allowed to use it, not with it, you know, not until you charged it solidly for about 16 hours. So I had this new phone downstairs, on charge, SIM card in it, and I was happily upstairs on the computer building this website. And then I was out at night, and I was due to get picked up. I think we were doing a bit of the old fantasy role playing, actually, at the old days house. We were due to do that. And I turned on this new phone, and there was a voicemail from you, actually, Gazza, saying, "Seriously, dude, if you've not seen it, turn on the news. I remember your words. There's some crazy shit happening." Yeah. I was like, okay. So I went and turned on the news, and it was like, what the hell am I watching now? What am I seeing? And I think anybody who witnessed it that day, which is, you know, an awful lot of the population will remember it. Those images of the planes striking a building are burnt onto the back of your retinas. You know, that's people watching it from, 4,500 miles away, wherever we are from New York. I can't even imagine what it's like to be a native New Yorker and seeing that going on in your home city. So, that's the JFK of our generation, I think.
It
literally was. And actually, when I look at the two dates, I'm amazed, actually, that they're only 4 years apart, because for me, the Princess Diana one seems almost like, I don't mean to sound disrespectful, old news, whereas September the 11th still seems current.
No, absolutely. Andy, obviously, do you want to add anything? Do you want to sort of, where were you? What were you doing? Do you remember what?
Yeah, I think we brought up in another podcast, but I'd finished school that year, done all my exams and all that stuff, and I was just waiting to go in the army in October. So I just had like a month or two of just bumming it around at home. So I was on my old Dreamcast playing Fantasy Star Online, and just going around like playing the game, whatever, online. And then everyone's there like, "Oh, fuck the blah, 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 blah." I was like, "Is this just a racist like chat I've gone on to or something like that?" So I just like carried on playing it a lot. And then I think I thought I'd see what they're going on about. So I put the news on, and then it's just as the planes were hitting, and I was like, "What the hell is this?" And it took like a bit of time for it all to sort of sink in. And then when my mum came home and all that stuff, watching the news, I was just like, bloody hell, that's massive. You know what I mean? Like, at the time, I didn't think it was going to be as big as what it was. But I was blown away by it. I was like, oh my God.
I think you are right in as much as when you say, I think that is our generation's JFK. You know, that is like, arguably the single standout piece of news world event that pretty much everybody in our generation will remember. I was teaching down in Oxford, and it was about half eight, quarter nine sort of America time, so it was sort of slightly later UK time, and it was just getting up to the point where pretty much school was finishing, the kids. And obviously the first plane, I think, had hit by that point, but we hadn't really got news of it. And news started to filter through, and we were like, initially we were told that that the White House had been bombed, and we were like, what? Seriously? Like, so we tried to get online, and literally, like, online was just like, just not happening. Obviously everybody's jumping online, and all the servers were down, everything. You couldn't get, literally, you just couldn't get any news at all. And I was with the head of history, guy called Jamie, and then I was with the head of MFL, who was a lady called Emma. And we were like, what, the White House has been bombed? This is like, you know, odd as such, you know, really? Can't get any information. And we were getting like random texts through from family and friends and stuff saying, have you heard? And we were, so anyway, Emma had got, she obviously head of MFL, so she'd got some satellite TV. So we ended up sort of tuning into sort of CNN, and there was like a couple of like European channels. There was like effectively like an Al Jazeera type channel that you know, it was all on back in there, was it cable or satellites? And we got news that a plane had hit one of the towers of it, and we were like, right, okay. So was it an accident, which everybody thought at first? It's like a, you know, somebody's sort of, it's obviously just a bad accident. And then the second plane hit, and we were like, oh, right, wow, okay, this is now something different. And I think it was about half three, maybe. And then they say the plane had hit the Pentagon? So the third one hit the Pentagon, and then they said there was a fourth plane hijacked, and we were like, oh, my God, like, this is... That went from being potentially an accident where one plane hits a tower to two planes have now hit a tower, one's hit the Pentagon. This is just something completely different. And I remember Jamie's words, and I might have mentioned it again on a previous podcast, maybe the one Andy was talking about, and he said, I remember it as though it was yesterday. He said, remember today, this day will change the world forever. And I remember thinking, really? And obviously now looking back, you know, like 20 years later sort of thing, he's right, because it did. And whether that's the historian in him and, you know, all of this and that, I don't know. But it was like, wow, like, Jesus, seriously? And I remember staying in school a lot later than normal, because obviously we got CNN. And then we actually saw live, because we didn't see live the planes hit, because it happened basically as school was finishing. And it was only just after school had finished that we flicked it on. But I remember seeing live the towers come down. And that was like, I mean, hairs on my arm, back of my neck. Now you were like, that really does affect so many different people. That... Not quite as life-changing for me, but potentially world-changing because of the impact it was going to have. And obviously then you got to know about Osama bin Laden and Al-Qaeda, and you got to know about the war on terrorism and all that. And these are phrases that were never really used before, that, you know, the war on terrorism. It hadn't really, as far as I'm aware, been used in some ways. Now it is. And Jamie was right. Absolutely, Jamie was right. Like, that day did change the world forever, really. So those are my sort of recollections of that day. I actually don't remember sending the text, Dad, or I genuinely don't remember it. So I it must have been one of those, you know, we were back in the day, text probably, you know, you're like, sort of thing. But you know, you texting, phoning friends, family, you watching this sort of thing. But I don't remember sending that text. But I genuinely remember the head of history, head of MFL, and myself as a bit of a newbie, a bit of an NQT newbie sort of. And yeah, he said, remember today. I was like, bloody hell. Like, how prophetic is that sort of thing? Do you know what I mean? Like, because he sort of is right.
Oh, 100%. 100% he's right. Yeah, definitely. Definitely.
You know, so that was, you know, that was my recollection of 9/11. Go on then. And I know Ken is not here, but did you buy into this sort of conspiracy, or were you always like a bit like, yeah, it was effectively an act of terrorism, and that's what it will always be?
I mean, speaking for myself, no, never. I never once bought any of the stories that I've ever heard about it. You know, I can't see it being anything other than what it is. You know, people have gone to war off of the back of it, whether you agree with that or not.
Yeah.
But yeah, there was two planes that were flown into those buildings that were probably the most grievous act of terrorism that we've seen in our time. And, you know, and obviously, yeah. You know, we lived through a fair bit of terrorism in the UK in terms of everything that went on from Northern Ireland. Don't want to sort of dredge that back up. Yeah. But, you know, there was some, you know, pretty serious atrocities committed then. But, you know, in terms of an absolute act of terror which shook the world, that was it. And that's what we witnessed. And I don't believe or buy anything else, like bombs on board the building beforehand, and the way it's like, yeah. No, you know, no, I don't buy it. I don't buy any of it.
Andy, what about yourself? And we're not going to go obviously down the sort of conspiracy line. We've done a podcast on that and stuff, but just very briefly, were you sort of, did you buy into that, or was it literally just an absolute act of terrorism in your eyes?
Yeah, up until probably like the last 10 years, to me, it's always just been terrorism. I think, like, I still think that, don't get me wrong, but I've seen like a few of the conspiracy shows and stuff like that, and I just think, well, I can't see, you know, the US government or whoever like pulling the wool over the world sort of thing, like,
yeah, yeah,
some of that. The wool over someone's eyes, should we say?
Yeah.
I think people, like I'd mentioned earlier, because it's such a big event, people don't accept it. And, you know, it makes sense for this as well.
Yeah, and there is a quote, and I can't for life remember what it is, and I'm not even going to attempt to remember it.
Not a Morrissey one, is it?
No, it's not a Morrissey one, but it centres around, you know, effectively a government or a country sort of trying to trick their whole nation type thing, and it's not quite, you know, the biggest trick the devil ever pulled was convinced the world he didn't exist. There's a nice little Kevin Spacey sort of quote for you there. But, you know, it wasn't that quote, but it was of that ilk. It was like, there's absolutely no way that you could convince so many people that this thing happened and then everybody believe it. You know, I just don't get it. And I've seen the still photos of the explosions before the plane hit, and I've seen people superimposing, oh, it wasn't a plane that hit the Pentagon, it was a missile. And you're just like, really? Like, come on, guys. You know, I'm not a massive believer in that. So they were the two, really, that I wanted to talk about. We're now going to sort of talk about perhaps an event that is more personal to each of us. So I don't know which one of you two want to go first. I've spoken a lot in this episode, so do you want to go first with yours? What's the event that sort of resonates with you personally, the one that you chose?
Well, it's an interesting one, really, because it's one that happened when I was 7 years old, and it was something that I didn't know an awful lot about. I didn't know this individual particularly well. Being 7 years old, I wasn't a particular fan of music, although did have a bit of a penchant for Blondie back then, but I think that
to
was
be fair, you're still not if you like Morrissey, but there we go.
We'll edit that out. Don't worry, folks. So yeah, it was the death of John Lennon in 1980. So it was the 8th of December 1980, and I was sat in the back of a brown Ford Cortina outside Shady Grove Stores, waiting for my stepdad to come back with my weekly order of sweets, and my brother was sat in the back there as well, and he left the radio on in the car, and the news came on that John Lennon had been shot and killed in New York City outside the Dakota building. And I remember John sitting there and thinking and saying, who's John Lennon? You know, bear in mind, you know, John would have been about four at the time, at the time, something like that. And, you know, my stepdad was sort of listening to it when he got back into the car, and he couldn't believe what he was seeing. Being, you know, he's a huge fan of the Beatles. He'd been to see the Beatles in the Cavern, and, you know, he lived that life back then. He was a huge, huge Beatles fan. And it was more the impact it had on him that seeing, you know, as a child, seeing news like that have an impact on an adult that really, really resonated with me. And it was only, you know, years later when I started listening to the Beatles and listening to the music of John Lennon. I love John Lennon and I love the music of the Beatles. And then to understand that and understand what went through the mind, although I don't think we really know what went through the mind of Mark David Chapman who pulled the trigger that day. It's, you know, it was a world shaking event that never really struck me as important as it was until I learned about it later. But I can remember seeing the impact that it had back then as a seven-year-old child. You know, I don't think you have too many memories from your childhood at that time. Yeah. But it's one that I don't even have to close my eyes. I picture it now in my mind's eye.
And that's and I think you hit the nail on the head there. Maybe you don't remember the event per se, but you remember the impact it had on somebody else, and that's the memory, isn't it? It's the impact that it had for somebody else, I suppose. I don't remember that. Obviously, reading about it, you know, listening to it and stuff afterwards. Yes, you appreciate that for a lot of people was an oh my god. You could go down there. Yeah, he was shot, and then you look at again the JFK, the Ronald Reagan assassination attempt, and all these things, and you're like, it didn't massively resonate with me, but you can sort of understand how it would resonate with somebody that perhaps has grown up with the Beatles, listening to the Beatles, and I know he's a fan of the Eagles, he quite likes the Eagles and stuff, and Status Quo, and that's so maybe. You know, if it was Francis Rossi, for example, that might have had more of an impact on him. But in terms of actually the impact that it had on a person, and you see that reaction, that's what you remember. You don't remember the event, but you remember the reaction of somebody else. Mm. So, Andy, go on, what was your sort of personal one, the one that resonates with you the most then?
This was a weird one for me because I went for like a big event after like 9/11 and all that.
Yeah.
So I was thinking like the last 10 years, there's like 2016, for example, is when all the celebs started dying, didn't it? I was like, well, no, there's too many deaths that year. I'll go a bit earlier. And so I went to Michael Jackson's death, 2009.
Okay.
And I think for me, it didn't hit me hard or anything like that, but it was just, I found it a weird to process, just because he's, you know, grown up and parents listening to Michael Jackson and all that. And obviously I listened to him and stuff. And it was just like, you know, this massive global king of pop had died. And I was like, oh, wow. And he's just about to do this like UK tour, wasn't he, and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It was quite a weird time, just weird to process it. I think I was at work at the time, working in Bristol. And I just remember seeing it in the newspaper. Like, I was like, what the hell is this? Like, I did sit there for like half an hour thinking, oh my god. Like, and then you sort of hear more about it, and it was all like accidental death and stuff. It's quite a weird time for me.
Yeah. It's weird because you go, I mean, obviously, I wasn't massively into music, but then you look at music icons. So you've mentioned John Lennon, you've mentioned Michael Jackson, then you look at Tupac. So you look at all of that and the impact that would have had on lots and lots and lots of people. Maybe not myself, but I'm not a massive Tupac fan. I like a couple of his songs and stuff. I could probably name one of his songs, maybe two, pushing it. But, you know, you look at people in film, music, news, TV, you know, these icons that you, not necessarily put up on pedestals as such, but you hear about, you read about a lot, and then all of a sudden they die, and it's like, okay. You know, I can imagine, and I can't believe I'm going to say this, but, you know, if there was a TikToker or a social influencer that died, you know, suddenly, you know, like the kids of today would be devastated, you know, absolutely devastated, you know, these social influencers that have like however many million people, and Kim Kardashian, for example, on on TikTok or whatever, Instagram, whatever, she's like £1 million per Instagram post or something stupid. You know, if she died, it'd be like, oh my god, there'd be like kids crying in the street. If she died, it'd be horrendous.
We need to get to that level. We need to get to that level of Tall Boy Radio. You know.
Well, fingers crossed. Kim, if you're listening, come on, retweet us.
Yeah, absolutely. Get involved. But no, On the Michael Jackson front, though, in all seriousness, Bill, who's a big fan of the show and always gets in contact, he's a huge Michael Jackson fan. And I can remember that one deeply affecting him as well. And to be honest, I'm not going to say it shocked me, because there was a certain amount of life events that were happening with that individual before and leading up to it. You just thought, you just didn't see it ending well. And it was one of those things that almost felt like it was only a matter of time. It was still absolutely shocking when it happened, you know, and I think, am I right in saying the doctor faced charges afterwards?
And again, we'll go down the conspiracy route. And was it the doctor that did it? And but wasn't it? I vaguely remember reading something like, did he overprescribe something, or was there a drug he was on it, or there was some sort of combination of drugs or something? I can't remember. But yeah, he was. I think he did face charges. I think he was acquitted. Was he maybe? But I don't know.
I don't think he was, dude. There might be one.
Do you think he was? Was he?
I've got a funny feeling.
Was he prosecuted? Was he?
I've got a funny feeling he was. Yeah, you can tell me I'm wrong if you like, at me, or Andy can get googling it. But yeah, absolutely.
He was. You can tell Andy's googling. Look at him.
Yeah, that's it. It's like a.
There you go. The light up on the face. He's there. Come on, Andy.
Yeah, criminal involuntary manslaughter.
Oh, right. Yeah, there you go. So what would go through? Well, okay, what would go through his mind? But then we obviously discuss Harold Shipman in the, so what would go through his mind? You know, what would go through anybody's mind if they want to do that sort of thing? It's hard to fathom, isn't it? But
I think when you got someone who's as rich as Michael, it's just like he wants a drug, you give it him. Yeah. I think he's on a big cocktail of drugs, wasn't he? Like,
yeah,
like
it was,
10
yeah,
different
yeah.
ones and
yeah.
painkillers.
Do you think it's as simple as that, though, Andy? Do you think it's as his GP? Would you not say, no, Michael, I don't agree with this? Doesn't matter how much you scream, shout, this, that, and the other. Or do you go down there, it's Michael Jackson, he's asking for it, so I'll give it him? Yeah, I don't know. I just find it hard to.
You go down the doctor.
Be obviously, but I find it hard to believe that somebody would, as a GP, somebody would just go, yeah, go on, just have it. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
I don't know. Yeah. I don't know. I just find that hard to fathom.
But let's face it, this guy is assigned to be his doctor. Michael Jackson obviously had an addiction to prescriptive painkillers and a number of other things. Are you going to have a GP that says no to you, or a GP that says yes to you on the books?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, yeah. Mm. And whether he was a yes man, I take your point. Michael Jackson's agent, whatever family, they're gonna get somebody that effectively bows to his whims, aren't they? They're gonna get a yes man, aren't they? Effectively, so
he gave him a drug that they only use in hospitals because then they can be monitored while they have it, and they're saying like this doctor had no training in this particular drug,
But he gave him anyway without really knowing perhaps side effects or the combination of drugs he was taking or whatever. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I can sort of see that, I suppose. I remember it. It's not one that massively resonates with me as such. I'm going to talk about, it's actually sort of two events rolled into one, and one of them is on my birthday, and one of them is, I think, very close to Adam's birthday, actually. And that's the London bombings. So back in 2005, 7th of July, 2005, my birthday is the 7th of July. And I was at work, or going to work, and it was when the London bombings happened, and there was a terrorist attack, and again there was all this, I suppose, on the back of 9/11 and, you know, the war on terrorism and all that, and I remember going to work and hearing that, was it three tube stations and one double-decker bus had been blown up effectively, and I remember thinking, A, it was my birthday, so it, you know, I remember it, and I remember thinking, again, excuse my French, thinking, shit, like what, London? No, I know that happened in New York, and I know but London, shit, that's close to, I've been to London, you know, I've never been to New York, but I've been to London, and I've been to that tube station, and I probably not gone on the bus, but I've gone on that route. You know, I'm thinking, so I remember that. And more so than that, actually, but it is related, is the 21st of July, 2005, which actually is Adam's birthday, if I'm not mistaken.
It is.
And Amy, who is my eldest, was in hospital. She's about a week old, and she spent the first week in sort of neonatal unit at North Staffs Hospital and stuff. Didn't have the easiest of births, but everything's okay now. And I remember there were four more bombings, and actually it was only the blast caps that went off. I think the actual bomb didn't go off, and they said it was a bit like a firework sort of thing. But I remember sitting in the hospital, and the news story broke, and I remember thinking, like, really? That's like 2 in 2 weeks, effectively. So there was the bombings on the 7th of July, which is my birthday, and then 2 weeks later, there should have been another four bombings, and the suspects, I don't know if they ditched their bags, but they realised that, certainly three of them realised that they weren't going to detonate, and it was just like a firework. And then the fourth one, I think, ran out and again tried to get on a bus and stuff, but that one didn't detonate either. So, and I'm not making light of it, but there was actually only ever recorded one person that was injured, and it was somebody that actually got he got an inhaler, he got an asthma attack because of, whether it's the fear or whatever it was, but that's the only person that effectively has gone down as being officially sort of injured by those events. But I remember sort of being in the hospital thinking, obviously I've got like my firstborn daughter there, who thankfully is now okay. But at the time, you're a bit like, yeah, I'm pretty sure she's going to be okay, but is she? And then thinking, you've got effectively these people that just want to rip the life out of so many different families. And I think that was the thing for me. And I know 9/11 was a massive thing, thousands and thousands of people died, but the 2005 bombings were, it felt more personal to me, just because of the first one was my birthday, and the second one, obviously I was in the hospital sort of just after the birth of my first daughter sort of thing. So I was a bit like, It really did feel like a personal attack sort of thing. And I was like, and I remember thinking, like, and it sounds really melodramatic now, but I remember thinking, like, how dare you do something that, you know, potentially could affect me and my family in the country that I live at? And it goes back to, I suppose, what Adam said in terms of, you look at the global impact of 9/11 and you think from 4,000 miles away, it had that impact on us. So what would the impact have been like on those people there? Do you know what I mean? So if you're actually in New York and you're in America, what did that feel like? So for me, that they were, I say there's two in one there. There's obviously the London bombings, the 7th of July, the 21st of July. And it's weird that I talk about them, because obviously it's mine and Adam's birthday, which is, I'm assuming they didn't pick those days for those reasons, but it is a bit weird. And that was the one for me that was very, very personal to me, and still is very personal to me. Just because, as I say, the impact that it had in terms of me and my family. We were going through, obviously, Amy's fine now. She's golden. She's brilliant. But at the time, it was a bit like, oh, right, okay. And you got all this loss of life or potential loss of life sort of thing. So, but anyway, you know, not putting a bit of a too much of a downer on it and stuff. Is there anything, and I'm going to put you on the spot now, is there anything more, I say, we'll change gear a little bit, in terms of more of an uplifting moment? Is there anything that you remember sort of positively, because we've been a bit doom and gloom, haven't we? So, you know, terrorism and shootings and stuff. Is there any event that you remember being really uplifting of that where you were or what you were doing. It could be a concert, sporting event, whatever it may be, that you remember exactly where you were and what you were doing. And I've put you on the spot there, obviously. Sorry, guys.
Well, I don't know. Well, this is a bit of a strange one for you then, because obviously when we were researching this episode, I said, you know, when I was younger, I was a prolific diary keeper. So I kept diaries from the year of 1986 to around about the year 2000. So quite a period of time. So I was sifting back through them, because I can remember writing down the news stories that had affected me at the time. So I dug out my 1986 diary, because obviously on the 26th of April, you had Chernobyl. And then Space Shuttle Challenger and that exploding the 28th of January 1986. But curiosity got the better of me, because
I thought it was a Curiosity Killer Cat then. When was that released? That must have been an 80s sound, was it?
Yeah, Curiosity Killer Cat was around about the 1980s. But yeah, Curiosity certainly, it might not kill the cat, but it got the better of me, because anybody who knows I'm a couple of years older than my wife. 13 years older than my wife.
Couple of years.
Yeah, and she was born in 1986, so I thought... Go on, I'll skip forward to that date in the diary when I was keeping as a 13-year-old boy, which just sounds so wrong now when you think about that, and see what I was doing on the day she was born.
I don't want to know what you're doing the day.
I was buying tat at a market in Pathelly on the day she was born. Yeah, in North Wales on the Lynn Peninsula. Yeah, so that's, I don't know if it's upbeat or uplifting or just deeply concerning when you break it down too closely. But I guess the one, I haven't written down the date, because all the stuff I wrote down was doom and gloom other than that.
And it's weird, don't it? Because you talk about, like, what you remember. Well, I remember the death of this person, I remember terrorism, I remember this, I remember that. Nobody really mentions about the really uplifting stories or whatever, I don't know, but...
I can't remember the date, but it was early 80s, and it would be Live Aid would be the one.
84, was it? 84? 80,
I think it was 84, and it was certainly summertime. I don't know if it was July or August, maybe June. I don't know. It's another one for you there, Andy.
Come on, Andy, get on the old Google.
Being back then a huge Nick Kershaw fan, and Nick Kershaw performed at Live Aid and tripped over a cable on stage, actually, and played it out quite well, if I remember correctly. But yeah, I remember tuning in, I can't believe this, Nick Kershaw's going to be live, this is going to be awesome. Never mind Bob Geldof and all the good work he's doing. Nick Kershaw's live on a Saturday afternoon on BBC TV, let's get involved with this. So yeah, I remember that. I really, really remember that and being really excited about that.
Yeah, Andy, go on. What was the date?
July 13, 1985.
Oh, wait. Oh, no, I'll tell you why I thought it was 84, because it was Queen. Was it Queen's, was it live tour? Was it, were they Wembley 84? So it might have been the year after that, possibly. 84, 85.
That's why I didn't have written down. I didn't start keeping a diary till the 29th of December 1985.
Yeah, I do remember, and obviously I've seen it back after the event and stuff, but Freddie Mercury absolutely just stole that concert. He was just a magician that day. Literally had, like, just the whole audience just in the palm of his hand. Andy, what about yourself? Any sort of more uplifting ones or stories or memories?
I don't know why. I just started remembering the England v Germany. 5-1.
Oh, I was going to say the Second World War.
I don't know where I was watching it, but I don't know where I was watching it, but yes, what a night that was.
1st September 2001. I thought it was the year after for some reason.
September 2001?
Yeah.
Is it really?
Imagine. Qualifying stages.
So England was that like
5-1?
What, 10 days before 9/11 then?
Yeah.
Amazing. So it's the 1st of September. Wow, okay. Yeah. Wow, fair enough. I mean, I remember. it was funny, because I remember that game, and I remember Germany, they could have actually scored a second. And who was in goal? Was it? Oh, Seaman? Did he make he made a really good save, I think. And
not
Germany
unusual.
Could have, no, absolutely not. No, brilliant keeper, and was it Carsten Janka that put Germany ahead, I think, and obviously the various other jokes about his name, but I think it was Carsten Janka put them ahead, and then I don't know, it was Muller that had a really good, and Seaman made an amazing save, and that would have put Germany ahead again. And then by the end of it, it was like Germany is so bad, even Emil Heskey has scored. And it's just like, I mean, proper like disparaging to Emil Heskey and stuff. Because to be fair to him, you know, he wasn't the most gifted or naturally talented footballers, but he made a brilliant career out of what he got and stuff. But it was like, even Emil Heskey. And I was like, okay, fair enough. But yeah, no, I remember that. And the other really uplifting one was, and it was World Cup, and it was Michael Owen when he went and he scored. Was it against Argentina? He put it in the top corner, and he's giving it all of this as he's running off. He scores the goal and stuff. So that was sort of proper uplifting. But it'd be interesting, just, you know, if we asked listeners for feedback and that. Do we naturally gravitate towards events that are morose, sad, death, terrorism, all that? Because when I said to you, right, what are the events that you remember? Pretty much everybody spoke about somebody dying. Yeah. So is that just like a natural default for us or what? I don't know.
It's quite interesting that, because when we talked about this episode, we said we're going to call it Where Were You When? And to be fair, the two events that we mentioned...
Yeah, they were quite amazing stuff. But the three that we've chosen individually...
Yeah, but not once when I was making the notes for this episode did I think I was going to do something uplifting. It was like some natural disaster. Where was I when that happened?
And we joked before coming on air, you know, you're talking about... you know, the Indonesian tsunami. You were like, yeah, well, Boxing Day, we're probably like sleeping over.
Guys,
you know,
we didn't joke.
We didn't
about
joke
that.
About. No, sorry. Let me rephrase that. No, absolutely. Yeah, let me rephrase that. We didn't joke about that because 200,000 people lost their lives over, and that is not. But we were discussing, you know, what we were doing and stuff, and again, that was another like absolutely catastrophic event. That was loss of life, but we never really spoke about the London Olympics or where were you when, and Tove Lundin won Olympic gold or whatever it may be, or when Morrissey first had his number one or whatever, you know, whatever it was. Adam was going to look at him. but it's weird, isn't it? So as a human race, do we automatically default to... Actually, the morose and the death and the I don't know. It's weird, isn't it? When you think about it, I never really thought until we were doing this podcast that actually all the things we've spoken about were sort of negative stuff.
Well, it's the one thing that everybody will have in common in their life. The one shared experience that you'll have is that it will end. And unfortunately, that's probably what we focus on and that we are drawn to it, because I forget whether it's James Joyce. Was it James Joyce who said about life being one immense slither of light in between two immensities of dark? I think it was him who said that.
Fair quote, if that's correct, dude.
Yeah. You can at me. That was probably wrong. I think it was James Joyce. And yeah, it is that life is so precious to us that those moments where it's taken away in such horrific terms are the ones that resonate probably with us most, because it's the ones that we can't put ourselves in that position.
Yeah. No, I absolutely. And whether or not we need a new podcast that follows on and we talk about uplifting events that we remember in our lifetime as opposed to sad events that we remember in our lifetime. But it is strange that, and I don't know whether it is human nature, and again, we could get into the old psyche and this, that, and the other and stuff, but it is strange that we do seem to focus on the negative aspects of society and life and this, that, and the other, as opposed to maybe the positive uplifting, you know, sort of, what do you remember? Oh, I remember this and this and this. Yeah, well, they aren't great, if you know what I mean, so... So maybe that is another podcast that we need to think about in terms of, you know, what were the uplifting stories of, or what the uplifting events that you remember? I mean, obviously, you talk about, and you know, Andy, you can't, but you know, the birth of your kids and you, the day you're married and this, that, and, you know, what are the uplifting moments that you remember? You know, sort of various drunken nights out with Ad and, you know.
I can't talk about them. Yeah, I can't talk about them. Well, yeah. I don't remember.
It's only second and third hand I can talk about them. I don't remember them at the time, but it's one of those. But it is weird. But I just sort of want to end effectively on there are life events, there are things that happen that sort of, I say, transcend the world and stuff that affect people globally. And the two that we spoke about, Princess Diana, 9/11, the ones that we feel in a way that was a moment. And please, if there's any listeners out there, you know, feel free to get in touch with us, all the normal sort of social media outlets, just get in touch with us. You know, what were the events that you remembered? What were the events that resonated with you? Maybe particular personal ones, or maybe ones that we would recognise. We know we're listened to in lots of different countries now, so if there's anybody listening in a particular country that has an event that's happened in that country that, you know, any American listeners, I mean, Bo, you listen, you know, what were your thoughts on 9/11? Tiddy and Shiner, what were your thoughts on 9/11? I know you've done a podcast episode on that and stuff, but, you know, give us a shout out, let us know what your thoughts were. And anybody else out there, Dale, I know you listen, give us a shout out. What are the events that you think about, you remember in terms of where were you when? And let's see where this episode goes, whether there's a follow-up. We'll wait and see. Hopefully we get a bit less of feedback. If we don't, so be it. We'll move on. I think we're sort of up to the hour mark-ish, give or take now. Ad, do you want to sort of say your goodbyes, sort of give a last sort of shout out, whatever?
Yeah, absolutely. Been a really interesting episode, this one. Like you say, we focus more on the maudlin than the upbeat. But I must admit, when I actually, the other event that I'll just chuck in just a 5 second bit at the end was the JFK being shot. I asked my mum about this one because obviously It was in her lifetime. She was 14 years old at the time, and she remembers that she was baking a cake and listening to the radio, and it deeply, deeply affected her because she recognized the importance of it. And that is the one prior to our generation that we talked about, the 22nd of November 63, passing through Dallas, Texas. And yeah, that's another interesting one. But yeah, I loved having that chat with my mum about that one and just seeing how that one affected her. But like you say, at some point, I think we need to do an upbeat version of this where we talk about some happy events. What are the happier times in our lives, whether they're personal, whether they are ones that were joint experience with the world? I'd like to follow that one up. So, yeah, you know, thanks for listening. Hit us up at tallboyradio.com and let us know what you want to hear about.
Absolutely. Andy?
Does it say more about us being this miserable old men?
maybe grumpy old men. That's a trick. Maybe that's it. Grumpy old men.
Maybe.
Possibly. Yeah, that probably depicts me. And I'm pretty good at the moment. Two grumpy old men, and a.
Let's just be grumpy men.
Let's just be grumpy. Okay, fair enough. To be fair, I'd take the older as opposed to grumpy. So we'll wait. We'll agree to disagree. but no, listen, guys, it's been. I've enjoyed hosting this one. It's, as I say, yes, the events were possibly slightly morose, but I just enjoyed exploring, you know, what our thoughts were, what we felt on the sort of, in particular, two events that we mentioned, and then the individual events that we spoke about. So if you are listening out there, feel free to hit us up, just at us, as I say, various sort of social media outlets, and we'll see how we go. Other than that, great, can't wait to chat to you again. Look forward to catching you next time. Gaz out.